I would like to take a moment and talk about something very near and dear to my heart. It's coffee. Sometimes at night, I think about the countdown to coffee time. This may sound strange, but this is me just being real. Starting my day with coffee always provides the uplifting mood I desire to tackle whatever is ahead. But honestly, sometimes with the increased energy and focus, it can be accompanied with a bit of jitters. I could, in theory, drink less, but come on now, let's not get carried away. Thankfully, there's Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. Everyday Dose combines coffee with collagen, natural nootropics, and theanine to help smooth everything out for you. Get the boost you need to accomplish your New Year's resolutions. Lion's Mane helps with natural focus, while L-theanine keeps the stress at bay. Everyday Dose is the perfect boost you need to accomplish your New Year. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code MINDFUL at checkout.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
A man's two basic needs are to feel respected and to feel competent. So when you think about our drivers, we love that. That is what fills our bucket when we are respected and we feel competent in a thing. And so what happens is we get into marriages and the husband, he'll come home from work. He's been there 8, 10, 12 hours a day, literally paid to solve problems, to bring solutions, to create strategies. And he gets respect at work for that. And so when he comes home, then he kind of keeps that switch on instead of turning it off, because it's those very skills that make you valuable in the workplace. They don't work at home because your wife is not necessarily concerned about your ability to solve problems or to acquire new clients or close deals. What she wants to feel is seen, to feel heard, and to feel safe.
Mitchell Osmond, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Les. I'm looking forward to having this conversation, man.
I was doing my little pre-conversation research and binging on a little Dad Nation podcast and found it quite inspiring, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate that.
There was a solo episode that wasn't too far back I was listening to, and it felt like a good pep talk.
Mm, that's a dream.
Yeah, I... A little bit farther ahead in you, as far as I'm 22 years and change into a marriage, and my kids are 19 and 22, but still felt very useful. Felt like stuff I really wish I heard in the earlier phase of that stage.
Yeah, you know, I get that often, man. Some of the guys who listen who are, you know, a little longer in the tooth, a little further on in marriage and in life, often say that they're like, man, I wish I had this podcast, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I would still find it valuable today, obviously, but for them, it's more of a reminder, right? But, you know, a lot of my listeners are, you know, that 30 to 45 year olds, you know, young kids, relatively newer into marriage, and really kind of wrestling with some of those main challenges for us as men, husbands, and fathers. We talk a lot about marriage, obviously. We talk a lot about fitness, overall managing your emotions, mindset, you know, all those things. So, yeah, I'm glad the episode resonated with you. And, yeah, man, it's awesome. Glad to be here today.
So what inspired you to get into this and try to, I guess, help dads and husbands and fathers to, you know, to just be better versions?
Yeah, man. Well, that's a great question. So thanks for asking. And I think it's important because people can often make the mistake of listening to podcasts and they think, well, that person has it figured out. They just, you know, they got it all lined up. And let me tell you, that is not my story at all. I learned about every lesson I learned the hardest way possible. And I've made a lot of mistakes. So I tell people all the time, I might know a couple right things to do, but that's because I've done so many things the wrong way. But yeah, man, my bit of my story and why I got into this is, you know, I was raised in this dysfunctional home, you know, drugs, alcohol, crime, abuse in my home growing up. You know, father was an alcoholic, a lot of trauma in my childhood years. And as I became a young man and got married, a lot of those unhealed wounds began to bleed into my marriage. And about 3 years into marriage, I mean, and I always been in leadership positions. I was fairly successful given where I had come from. And I got let go of a senior leadership position and my life kind of spiraled, man. I gained 60 pounds. We were 100 grand in debt. I was medicating with alcohol and drugs every day to just cope. And me and my wife were on the verge of divorce. We had a big fight about kids, actually. I'd always dreamed of being a dad because of my past, and I wanted to reclaim a lot of those things. And we had this conversation, and she looked at me and was like, no, I'm not interested in bringing a kid into this relationship, into this life. And I was like, what? Like, totally gobsmacked, totally confused. And that was the day we used the word divorce for the first time ever. And we'd always said we wouldn't even joke about it. And so I hit a rock bottom of rock bottoms, man. And I was like, if this doesn't change, then, you know, I had a flash of where my life was headed: overweight, more depression, alone. You know, I have an addictive personality. So I knew that I'd probably go down that path of alcoholism, like my father, like his father, like his father. The second turning point for me was 7 days later, man, after we had that huge fight. I mean, keep in mind, I'm in the middle of thinking that my wife's a day of walking away. And I got invited to sing at the funeral of this very wealthy man who is a philanthropist. And after the minister had shared all that this man had done, he'd asked the congregation a question. He said, "Are you living a life worthy of imitation? If you were to die today, would you be proud of the legacy that you left?" And I barely heard it. I mean, I was strapping on my guitar getting ready to sing, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I could barely choke out the lyrics to the last song because all I could think was, man, if this were my funeral, nobody would be saying, I want to imitate his marriage. I want to model his finances. I want to live a healthy life like he did. You know, and it was a sobering moment where I was faced with my mortality. I mean, I was literally staring at a casket, thinking about, well, what if that were me? And so that day, man, I went home and I made a commitment to change. That I knew that I had to die to the man that I was, the life that I had, in order to become a version of me that my wife needed. And if I ever wanted a family, I'd need to become him. And so I brought in mentors, man, like 5 men in my life who I respected and admired, who had success in those different areas. Men who, my ceiling was their floor, you know, they were living where I wanted to go. And within about 18 months, a year and a half, completely paid off the 100 grand of debt, lost the 60 pounds, completely restored our marriage, and got clean of substances and distractions. And yeah, man, I started helping buddies of mine, you know, because I was in public positions often. And so I had a lot of questions of like, dude, what are you doing? Your life is on fire, man. You lost all this weight. So I started helping friends, helping them build budgets to get out of debt, going to the gym, training them, you know, helping them reconnect with their wives. And one of my mentors said, man, if you really want to have an impact, if you want to take this seriously, you need to start a podcast and share your story with the world and help more men turn it around. And that's when I launched the Dad Nation podcast about 2 years ago. And it was birthed, you know, out of this passion. And then 6 months into that, I had listeners all around the world and, you know, became a top 5% globally rated podcast, and then launched a coaching practice because men would reach out and say, hey man, could you help me with this? And I heard an episode from Ed Milet a little while ago, and he said, you are the most qualified to help the person you used to be. And so for me, you know, Les, that is what I do today. I help the man I used to be. And sometimes I fall into that trap of kind of becoming that man again if I'm not careful. And so launching the podcast, launching the coaching practice is really a selfish motive because I know the best chance that I have of being a great husband and a father is to surround myself with other men who are trying to do the same and dedicate my life to teaching them how to do that. So yeah, man, that's my story and that's how I got here.
That's a nice story, man.
Thank you. Thank you, dude.
Help the man you used to be. That's good. You know, listening to your podcast, there's a lot of little catchy things, like a lot of like self-help gems, I guess, that are nice to lean on.
I'm a sucker for the one-liners because we remember them, right? And, you know, they pop up in times when you need them, so.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I mean, use what works, you know? Mm-hmm. Use the tools that help you. Mm-hmm. So that's great, and you dish them out well. So let's break down some of these categories. I mean, that's a real dark place. You get the, you know, you're facing reality that your wife has a very different opinion of the relationship you're in than you do, it sounds like. Like you weren't, that's the impression I got that you, not that you probably thought everything was fine, but you didn't see it the same way clearly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What kind of steps did you do on the relationship front to try to, you know, be a better husband?
Yeah, well, you know, my story, you know, and I'll answer that question, but just to acknowledge sort of what you're saying about the fact that I was blindsided, you know, my story is not unlike many men's situation. And let me share a couple statistics with you that are kind of shocking. In the U.S. today, we know that 7 out of every 10 divorces are initiated by the women in the relationship. And when you dig deeper into that statistic, in situations where the wife is has a high education or she's a high income earner, that number jumps to 90% of divorces are initiated by the women in the relationship. Now, what's even crazier is of the divorces that are, you know, initiated, 80% of the time, the reason cited for the divorce is not what people think it is: money, sex, you know, kids. It's not abuse, none of those things. It is emotional disconnection. It is, I felt like my feelings didn't matter to my husband. I didn't feel like a priority. They felt like they're roommates. That is 80% of the reason for divorces in the U.S. today, which is wild, right? So, but it tells us a very interesting piece of information that the vast majority of relationships, because if they end, it's because of the wife. It means that usually it's the wife that's unhappy. They are highly I would say 10x, 20x more emotionally intelligent than men, generally speaking. And I'm talking about just our wiring, right? And there are men who are very emotionally intelligent. But when we're talking about the vast majority of us, the masses, they're so much more intuitive and intelligent in their emotions. And so that's why they can be feeling completely unhappy or disconnected, and we have no idea. We think things are fine, or maybe they're not great, but they're not terrible, right? But that's the situation so many men find themselves in. And then this drift happens over time, and then they wake up one day and their wife is packing the bags. And they're like, whoa, what's going on? Like, I had that conversation with a past client of mine. He called me, and he found out his wife had a bunch of money saved up. And it was like runaway money, and she put a down payment on a place. And he called me. He's like, my wife is about to move out, and she's got all this money saved up. She's taking my girls. I had no idea. You know, so it's a wild scenario that so many men find themselves in, right? So what steps, I think the question was, what steps or what did I do, you know, to turn it around in my marriage? It's a massive question. But the biggest thing, there were two big things that I did. One was I brought in support, right? Multiple kinds of support. You know, like I alluded to, I gathered men around me, mentors. This was so powerful that I created a framework around it called the Iron Five. And every one of my clients today has their own Iron Five. Five men that surround them in these different strategic areas that they need support in to ensure their success. Because we all will self-sabotage, because that's generally how we work, unless we have mentorship and people around us to hold us. Hi, so the first thing I did was got a support group, a network of men around me, mentors. The second thing was I made promises, I made commitments and kept them. I said to my wife, I get that I've made promises and I've broken them. It's like the boy cried wolf. If you give me 6 months to do this, to turn it around, to show you that I can be a good man, that I can be loving, that I can honor you, cherish you, respect you. And if after 6 months you don't see an improvement, you can leave. Not that she needed my permission to leave, but I said, I will support you in leaving. If after 6 months you don't see the changes you need. And so that's how committed I was. I made a promise. And I told my mentors about that. And so those were a couple things that I did. And then I learned a lot about women. I learned a lot about my wife and her needs. And that's a lot of what I teach today. I teach men about the needs, the basic needs of most women. And I teach them about their own basic needs that maybe they're unaware of so that they can communicate to their wives what their needs are. Because us as men, we have needs and we don't even know what they are a lot of the time. Right? So that's a little bit about what I did, you know, to start that journey.
How long ago was that?
8 years ago.
Okay, it's been a while. Yeah, I too found myself in a place at one point, like surprised, assuming that my wife and I would be just understood we'd be together forever. And then I asked her once when we were at Tusk Bell, and like she clearly wasn't on the same page, and it was like fucking eye opening for me, and very important part of like me figuring out, you know, who I want to be in life.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the needs for a second. You said, you know, it's not just understanding the woman's needs, but also the men's. Explore that a little bit.
Yeah, man. So I think a lot of men think that their wife needs a paycheck. You know, we need to provide, which is great and important. But a wife doesn't desire a paycheck as much as she desires other things. And so men make the mistake of trying to meet emotional needs with practical solutions. So if she's upset and she has an emotional need, you know, we make the mistake of buying a necklace. It's like, well, that's not the solution, right? But as men, we're designed to work, to provide, you know, all those different things. So every woman has three core needs: to feel seen, to feel heard, and to feel safe. Now, in those three needs, there's, you know, subcategories that we can break down. But on the flip side, for men, a man's two basic needs are to feel respected and to feel competent. Okay? So when you think about our drivers, we love that. That is what fills our bucket. When we are respected and we feel competent in a thing. Not really what fills a wife's bucket. And so what happens is we get into marriages and the husband, you know, now of course the woman has, you know, in our modern age, women have careers too, but I'm talking about a situation where, you know, the husband is a primary financial provider. He'll come home from work. He's been there 8, 10, 12 hours a day, literally paid to solve problems, to bring solutions, to create strategies. And he gets respect at work for that. He feels very competent in that because he does it. He spends more time doing that than anything else, right? And so when he comes home, then he kind of keeps that switch on instead of turning it off, because it's those very skills that make you valuable in the workplace. They don't work at home because your wife is not necessarily concerned about your ability to solve problems or to acquire new clients or close deals. What she wants to feel is seen, to feel heard, and to feel safe, right? And so what happens is we come home and all we do is we talk about work, right? Or when she starts talking about her feelings, she had a hard day, she got in a fight with her mom, the kids were difficult, whatever. We don't turn off that switch and we start shoving solutions down her throat and fix it. What happens is she's like, whoa, 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 I don't need you to fix this. Why are you? I'm just trying to talk to you, right? And then you get offended because you're like, well, I'm trying to help. Don't you want some help? Right? You're laughing, and probably every guy who's listening is laughing now.
Every relationship probably hits that cycle over and
exactly.
Over.
And but what happens there, though, psychologically, is the man begins to feel incompetent. Well, his core need is to feel competent and respected. So he feels like he's unloving because he's not listening to her, right? Not meeting that need to feel seen and heard. Because she's talking about her feelings and he's not addressing it and validating it and all those different things. So what happens is if she feels unloved, then she gets disrespectful and he feels incompetent. And then when he feels disrespected and feels incompetent, he's not loving to her. and is not seeing her, hearing her, appreciating her. And this is what we call the crazy cycle. Right. And so what happens, every married couple or long-distance relationship has been in this situation at some point or another. But here's what happens, is men, what do? They lean into things that they're good at. They spend more time at work because that's where they get respected. That's where they feel competent. I've had guys call me, clients call me 10 o'clock at night from the office, be like, man, there's nobody left and it's dark, but I'm more comfortable in this dark office sitting at my office, at my desk, than I am going home to talk to my wife. Because I have no idea how to succeed there. So what happens is men drift away because they lean into the things that they, that where their needs are getting met. And the wife, who has a need to feel appreciated and to be loved and cherished, she leans into other areas like children to get her needs for affection met and other friendships. And so what happens is we drift and drift away and we become roommates sharing rings. You know, we become roommates sharing a mortgage and we live two different lives. And that's the drift, right? And that's what happens with the needs of a man versus the needs of a woman. And I say this all the time, you know, because I've been in a room, you know, I'll ask a room, 200 guys. I'll say, would you rather hear the words, I love you from your wife or I respect you? And 95% of the men in the room would rather hear their wife say, I respect you. Or for example, like this phrase that instills encouragement or belief. If a wife would say to a man, I believe in you, proud of you. Man, I could live on that for 6 months.
Right. Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know what I mean? And that's the language. That means so much more to the average man than I love you. Now, vice versa for women, it's not the same thing, right? And so that's the trouble we get into in relationships.
That's interesting. Yeah. Mitchell, the idea of feeling like you're competent, do you think that a man needs to feel that he's competent or has a need to feel that other people think that he's competent?
Well, that's a great question. I think he needs to feel competent because if he's not competent and people think he's competent, he still knows deep down that he's not living an integral life. He's not being authentic because people might think this thing about him, but he doesn't necessarily feel that on the inside. And there's a lack of congruency, a dissonance internally, right? And so I think men need to genuinely feel that confidence and competence as a man, a husband, and a father. That is the key to being more content, right? But that's the trouble we get into all the time is we don't necessarily feel those things. And so we don't show up as powerfully at home because deep down we don't believe that we can, or we don't really know how to, or we don't feel like we serve a purpose at home like we do at work. We feel powerful at work, but we come home and we feel powerless, right?
It's interesting, you know, thinking about women's needs, the you know, this stuff comes in different forms, but, you know, seeing her feel safe, like my wife, I've recognized the things that make her feel safe. It's like taking care of things that are, like if we were to go on a trip, let's say we're going on a vacation, me just booking it all and not asking her a single question about it is like what makes her feel cared for. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I were to say, do you want, do you want to be on this side of town and we'll have a bigger place, we'll have a fireplace and you can crochet by the fire? Or do you want to be on this side and get a water view? Like putting that on her, it's like she has enough. Like it's the little things. Like I know she doesn't want to have to make that decision. And just the fact, just like not presenting it to her is what makes her feel like she's just being taken care of. And that's like her love language.
Exactly. She's probably got a love language of acts of service, something like that. But what you pinpointed here is when men can acknowledge the mental load of their wives and step in and take care of things, take things off their mind. When we talk about leadership, I talk a lot about leadership in the home and I get into trouble about it all the time. It's like, well, from men and women, because women sometimes, well, especially from men, because they're like, why do I have to lead? Why can't she lead? You know? Or I don't know how to lead or whatever. But at the end of the day, women have such a high mental load. Like, so for example, my wife, you know, she's not just only thinking about her career. She's thinking about our son. She's thinking about, I mean, when we go on a trip, she's thinking about his clothes, his pack and play, you know, diaper, snacks, you know, any possible thing, everything. And all I'm thinking about, man, is putting the coordinates in the GPS, you know, and driving there. And, you know, it's old school. We kind of function that way, but that's the situation. And so when I'm like, hey, how can I take some things off of your plate? By planning the vacation, by packing some things up, by, you know, taking care of whatever, like as many things as I can, I'm acknowledging. So under the idea of feeling seen, there's appreciation, acknowledgement, and affection. Those are the three, you know, prongs of having her feel seen. And so one of those is of acknowledgement, right? Acknowledging her mental load and stepping in and taking the initiative, leading the way by planning the trip, leading the way by taking care of all those details so she doesn't have to think about it. That's very common for men, for women, right? And so many times men don't acknowledge that mental load. They don't step in unless they're asked to. And then they'll say, well, I can't read your mind. Why can't you just tell me what to do? And then what your wife is thinking then is, well, that's just another thing to do. Because I got to think about all these things. Now I got to think about what I'm going to tell you to do.
And she's like, you should know.
Well, you should just know.
I shouldn't have to tell you.
She wants you to anticipate the needs. Because what happens is you start feeling like another dependent. You start feeling like another kid. Right, because now you got to take care of. Now she's got to take care of the husband's needs as well. Because now I gotta micromanage you and tell you every single step you need to take to help me out. Like, why can't you just anticipate it, right? And so that's why that old adage, which I hate, women make jokes like, you know, I got four kids, two boys and a girl and a husband. You know, I'm like, I hate that. But realistically, that's what happens when in marriages when a husband doesn't step up and take leadership and support his wife that way and say, hey, how can I help? Or just help, like you said, plan the things. Then she's like, man, I feel like he's with me in this versus some task that I have to manage. And so a wife sort of steps into this role of leading everyone, taking care of all the details. And the husband sort of retreats and doesn't necessarily take ownership of anything. And so the feminine is stepping into the masculine in some ways, and then she begins to operate in a way she's not necessarily designed to do, and then what happens? She starts to lose respect for her husband,
right?
Because she's stepping into the masculine, which is his responsibility, and then she feels a lack of respect, then what happens? He doesn't love her the same way, and then we get back into that cycle again.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think like culture, society, and like the media doesn't do any favors to that, like the way husbands are depicted in like shows and
yes.
movies and such, like it's not helping.
No,
you know,
men are a joke on sitcoms,
right
there's a million and one shows out there where men are just goofy, they don't take ownership, they sit around all day, whatever. The woman is, you know, criticizing him, self-deprecating humor, whatever. Like, that's just, you know, you think Homer Simpson,
yeah.
right? Whatever. And that's just the way society has portrayed the man. And so us, you know, we grew up in that, watching that, being influenced by that. Women also grew up watching that. And now we're in a situation where, you know, and I get in trouble all the time by saying this, but like, you know, we talk about the word masculinity. And like what that looks like today. And so many men are so confused about what is a modern man today, because they've been grown up and they've been indoctrinated in this idea that men aren't necessary or needed, you know, because the woman steps in and does everything. And so we're more insecure than ever. We're more confused than ever. And women are more frustrated than ever because they're trying to step into both roles. And they're like, where are all the good men at?
Yeah, and you know, it doesn't help that testosterone is like plummeted on a population level.
Dude, crazy, right? So test levels dropping. We know like the average man in the U.S. today spends 2,000 hours a year on screens, drowning himself in distractions, right? Which is wild. Men are more medicated than ever. And anxiety rates in both genders are through the roof. But here's some crazy statistics that should make you think, if you're listening to this and you're a man and you feel like you don't have a purpose. One in every four kids in the U.S. today will grow up without a father in the home. Now, like I said, parts of society might say that men don't matter, but the numbers will say otherwise. So we know that 63% of youth suicides today come from fatherless homes. 90% of homeless and runaway children come from fatherless homes. 85% of kids with behavioral disorders come from fatherless homes. Yeah, and the last one, 71% of high school dropouts, guess what, come from fatherless homes.
Yeah, I think it's the strongest correlate when you're just looking at crime in general.
100%. What? Yeah. And so understand that how you show up matters, that there is a role for you in the relationship, and that your presence is significant. And if you're a wife and you're listening, or a woman and you're listening and you're struggling with this and you're like, my husband doesn't step up, well, understand there is a solution to this. And if not for you, do it for your children. Because your children, as we know, the statistics, they need you. As a healthy, functioning man and wife, husband, wife, man, woman in the home, right? Like, it's so, so important. And here's the thing. Masculinity can't be taught by a woman. Masculinity can't be taught. It has to be caught by other men, okay? You can't fabricate it. The best thing you can do for your son to learn how to be a man is get him around other great men who are healthy, and he's going to catch that from them. You can't teach it in a textbook, right? And this is the thing. A woman steps into both the masculine and the feminine roles and then tries to be, and you know, God love her, she tries to be that for her son, but it doesn't work, right? And that perpetuates this narrative. And so this is why men grow up, or boys grow up and are confused. Right. So I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but all that to say, it's more important now than ever to know who you are as a man and to be confident in your calling. Right.
What role, Mitchell, do you think the fitness plays? Like, that in itself seems like a on-ramp to build the competency, like that feeling of being confident. Like, even if you feel like you're flailing at the day-to-day stuff that you can't get a hold of, I feel like just getting in a gym or like doing something physically challenging with some regularity is a way to kind of cultivate that sense of competence that you really, I guess, need to be able to show up, not just for yourself, but for the other relationships in the household.
I mean, bro, how much time we got? I mean, don't get me started on fitness and how important it is, right? Let me share some details with you. I mean, every one of my clients has a fitness plan because it's a non-negotiable. If you want to work with me, you have to exercise. And there's a few reasons for that. I think fitness is catalytic in your personal development as a man, or as anyone for that matter. You know, but here's why, right? We know that when we exercise, there are tons of neurochemicals that are released, like norepinephrine, you know, oxytocin, serotonin, dopamine. Things that help you actively combat stress, things that help lower cortisol levels, things that help boost your natural testosterone. These are things that help you think creatively. That's why you get the best ideas you've ever had after a good workout or after a run or after something like that. You feel inspired. Not to mention that if you're at the gym and you're pushing, you got a new PR on a squat or something, you know, that's going to be the hardest thing you do all day. And so you go to work after that, you got to take a sales call. You're like, hell yeah, I can do that all day. I did the hard, I just benched, you know, 245. That was such adversity and challenge. And so you're setting yourself up psychologically to face way more because you've said yes and you faced such a difficult thing first thing in the morning. And so number one is what it does to you on a neurochemical or a neurological level and on a psychological level is so, so powerful, right? You want to see professional development. You want to see a breakthrough in your work and in your home. Start working out. Now, another reason why it's so important is because it helps restore your self-confidence. Because the simplest way I've heard self-confidence really explained is this. If you want to become more self-confident, you have to make promises to yourself and keep them, right? Because let's look at it this way, Les. If I were to say to you, hey, Les, we're going to meet every Tuesday at 7 o'clock for a beer. Every Tuesday night, we're going to have a pint together. And the first Tuesday, we show up at 7. The next Tuesday, I show up at 8. The third Tuesday, I show up at all. And then you keep showing up for 5-6 weeks. What's going to happen? You're going to lose confidence in me. You're going to lose confidence in the relationship. You're going to start saying things like, well, he didn't show up. So how am I, why would I trust that he's going to follow through? You know? And so we think about this all the time in the context of relationships, but we don't often think about how it affects us ourselves. So let me bring it back to my point. When you make a promise to yourself, I'm going to get up at 6 a.m., I'm going to go to the gym. And then the next morning, you wake up and you push snooze and you push snooze and you don't do it. What happens is you break that promise to yourself. You do that enough times, you erode rapport with yourself. You erode that confidence in yourself, hence self-confidence. And so what happens is your subconscious mind begins to say things like, why would anyone else trust you if you can't even trust yourself that you're going to follow through? And so if you're listening to this today and you would think, you know, where are the areas that I am most insecure or lacking self-confidence? I guarantee you it is the place where you've broken the most promises in your life. If you've broken the most promises in your marriage, that's where you have the least self-confidence. But here's why this is so important. So when it comes to fitness, not only does it have all those neurological benefits, but it's the simplest, most tactical way you can rebuild self-confidence. You can make a small promise to yourself. I'm going to get up at 6 a.m. I'm going to do 10 push-ups. That's it. Start small. Yeah, make a promise.
It's way simpler than being good at hearing your wife's needs.
Yes. Yeah, right? It's totally...
The easier on-ramp to like start working on yourself and all the other things in your life.
Yeah, and what happens then, man, is you just... Over time, you make a promise, you keep it, you make a promise, you keep it. And then after a few weeks, you're like, yeah, no, like I follow through with the things I say I do. And then you can start confidently saying things like, I'm a fit person. I'm an active person. Why? Because you've stacked wins. You've continuously casting votes for who you are becoming. And so you start making promises in your fitness. Now you're confident, right? It's called the confidence competence loop, because now you grow in competence in that area, which gives you more confidence to do it again, right? And so then you start making promises in other areas of your life. So that's why we always start with fitness, because that's the most tactile way to begin something, right? And it's easy to see when you're failing.
Yeah, and you feel progress. Most people, especially if you're, I mean, obviously, if you're untrained, you feel progress quickly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's within a week or two. You might be sore and beat up for the first few days, but within 2 weeks, like, you feel better. It's not like a big commitment to feel like you're on right track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's those newbie gains, right? Like, yeah. It's awesome. Or losses if you're trying to lose weight. But
how
yeah,
did you lose? You said you lost 60 pounds in the beginning of this process?
Yeah, man.
Was that all through the gym or diet?
So here's the thing, man. I worked out for a long time, and while I was 60 pounds overweight, I was still occasionally working out, which is crazy. And so training was never a problem for me. Working out was never a problem for me. It was the diet. And so I had tried trainers. I had tried gym memberships. Nothing would work for me. And so I hired a trainer who was a specialist in food addiction and psychology. And what he did with me was help me understand my addiction to food. Because you would know this as a gym owner, like what, 80, 85% of your fitness results come from what you put in your mouth, right? That's why we say, you know, your body is built in the gym, but sculpted in the kitchen, right? Or it's sculpted in the kitchen, built in the gym, right? Like, you can build muscle, but unless you control what you eat, you're never going to get ripped or shredded. You won't see it, right? And so for me, he helped me understand my issue with food. And here's the crazy thing. And this is what was one of the first things that got me so interested in psychology, was because I began to understand the bond with food that was formed with me as a child. So for example, when I come home from school. I got bullied a lot in school. I was a very introverted, overweight kid. I was a band geek. Like you name every, I was textbook geek. And so I come home from school and my mom would say, "How's school?" And I'd say, "I got bullied." I'd cry or whatever. She'd say, "Here's a cookie." Right? Did you feel better if you have a cookie? So what I started doing, and she loved, God love her. I mean, she just wanted to help me, right? But I, from an early age, learned a very strong attachment between when I'm upset, when I'm sad, when I'm mad, when I'm stressed. Food makes me feel better. Specifically, chocolate makes me feel better. And I developed this strong bond. And as I grew, and at that point, I was 32 years old. Still, when I had a hard day at work, when I was going through a hard time in my marriage, when I was overwhelmed by our debt, whatever, what would I do? I turned to the pantry. And so I needed to break that bond, that psychological bond with food. And that was what unlocked it for me. And when I truly understood how to maintain a caloric deficit, you know, that's when I started losing the weight. But that's what I do with my community and my clients. It's like working out, yeah, we'll get to that. But we're going to do the deep work because there's a reason why. Like if it was just information and it was just a plan that we needed that would fix us, then we'd all be walking around with six packs and, you know, 10% body fat. But it's just, we don't need more information. We need to do the deep work and understand the hangups and what triggers us to fall off the map. And James Clear says in his book, Atomic Habits, he says, you don't rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. And so we build systems in your life so that when you fall, you don't fall off the cliff, you stumble, and there's a safety net, right? So community is one of those things. A simple system that I used when I started taking my fitness seriously is I started saying to my wife, listen, if it's in my house, it's in my mouth, okay? So if you make cookies, you know what? We're gonna make a dozen. You're gonna give 10 away, and we're gonna keep two here, one for you, one for me.
Yeah, I'm very good about not bringing junk in the house, but if it's there, I'm not very good at modulating.
Yeah, totally. And like, let's not pretend that we are. Like, I've had to humble myself and understand if it's there, I'm gonna eat it. And why do I have to put myself through that? Like, constantly testing your will. I know. Get it out. Right. And so it's a simple system that I put in place, you know, so that I didn't fall off the wagon and find myself eat, you know, six slices of cake deep, right? Like 1 a.m. up stuffing my face in the pantry because there's nothing there to eat. There's just clean whole food like strawberries and watermelon. Tell you what, man, nobody became obese by eating too many strawberries. That never happened. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so that's a bit about the fitness piece for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to understand, to have that awareness of like why, I mean, maybe you can get by without it, but having the awareness of like where that need to use food to cope comes from makes it a lot easier to shift your belief about yourself and then your behaviors and actions going forward. I mean, you could out-muscle that and just you say, well, I'm not going to eat this. But having the awareness of why you do it is very important. And that could be for all these categories of your life, like, you know, why you show up to the relationship or why you show up to the gym the way you do, or the fear of you know, whatever you have to face, whatever's keeping you from being able to pull into the parking lot. Which many people, that's the hardest part, just pulling in the parking lot. Just like,
yeah, I can't remember that quote. The heaviest weight in the gym is the front door.
That's good.
Right?
Yeah.
It's true. If you can open that front door and get in there, you're good.
Yeah, it's crazy over the years. I mean, I've worked in the gym for a long time now, and I used to really get hung up on like what you do in the gym. I mean, I could really like just nerd out on programs and nuance and technique. But as I've got older, I realized that consistency and frequency are just so much more important. Like the people that come in like 4 days a week, you know, for decades, like it doesn't really matter. As long as they're not like hurting themselves, like it doesn't really matter what they do. It's just not that important.
Well, and that's and I think that's the thing we don't understand. It's like consistency over intensity. I don't give a rip about how hard you go. How long can you go? You know, how long can you keep doing this? This is why with my clients, like, so I've got clients around North America. A lot of my following is from the States. And like, as we said before we hit record, I'm in Canada. So do a lot of remote stuff. But for the clients that I've had in person here around me, you know, one of the steps, like for guys who want to lose weight, one of our first steps is not doing a workout, which surprises people because they think, oh, well, where's my workout? Well, you know, where are you going to meet me? What gym are we going to go to? You know, the first thing we do is we drive to the gym and we park in the parking lot and we sit there for a few minutes and we drive back home. And they're like, what am I paying you for? I'm like, listen, we're just going to get here. Number one, we're going to build that. We're going to build those promises to ourselves. Like, can I get up and get to the gym? Okay, well, sweet. We're going to build a rhythm around that. Then we're going to go and we're going to do one workout, maybe two. Then we're going to leave again, right? And then we're going to build, again, that confidence and those rhythms, a sustainable way of living. Because that's the problem guys make. That's the mistake they make. They get on some crazy-ass plans, you know, 6 days a week, like, you know, every day is a PR day, and they destroy themselves with something that's so far from being sustainable. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, or they start in your 30s, 40s. I mean, you can compensate for a lot of that when you're 18.
Yeah. But like, or they'll get on like a, you know, hard 75 hard or some crazy keto plan. And like, dude, just do something simple. And that's why, you know, there's such a high success rate with me and my clients is because that's how we do it. Because you're not going to do, like, what's the point in doing anything if you can't keep doing it for the rest of your life, right? And so this breaks down into everything that we do, right? Like a plan to reconnect with your wife. Well, we're not going to do it if you can't do it for the rest of your life. If you want to be married, then you got to keep doing it. It doesn't work for 2 weeks because you fall right back to where you were. Like when we do nutrition plans, I don't give you a brand new nutrition plan. I take the food that you're already eating with your family, and I modify that slightly. You know, I add things rather than taking things away. I might subtract some of the things, but I'm going to add in clean whole foods. I'm going to up the protein and, you know, all those different things so that you're not in this situation where mom and the kids have to eat spaghetti and you've got to eat chicken breast, broccoli, and rice. You know what I mean? Or you got to learn a whole new set of cooking skills because you got to learn this plan. It's like, no. We're going to do kind of what you're already doing. We're just going to modify it to make it work for you and your family, actually, because that's the sustainable plan, right? Consistency over intensity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in my own experience, one thing that I've always found helpful, especially with working with folks that are, I guess, not really used to making big changes and trying to control the dials of like how their, you know, health manifests, is really connecting with why they're doing it. And yeah. And like the benefits of it, especially in the gym, where I find the more you are connected to why you're doing it, like what it can do for you, like ultimately, I think a lot of us, most of us have pretty much the same goals. We might articulate it differently, but we want to be around for a long time and on our own terms and, you know, mm-hmm. not be a burden on loved ones and stay out of a nursing home, however, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the same qualities that we really need for all these goals, even though we might call the goals differently. But the more you're connecting with that, the easier it is to just show up and open up that heavy front door. And I also find, I think it's easier to enjoy that process where mm-hmm. The goal is not how hard can you do today. The goal is to know that you're doing it for reasons that you actually care about, something that you deeply value, and then just enjoy that process and allow it to unfold the way it does, knowing that you're spending your most valuable resources, your time, towards something that you think is super valuable, like being able to be there for your family, you know, much later on. So you can like get down on the floor and play with your grandkids or, mm-hmm. you know, help out when people need and not be a burden or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I say your why power will always be stronger than your willpower.
Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years, and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
Right. When you're connected with your why, that's going to outweigh your will every time.
Because all the catchphrases, Mitchell.
But if you're just trying to muscle it, trying to use your willpower, that's going to fade. But if you're connected with your why, dude, like, and that's the thing, like, you know, I had a client a little while ago and he was, I don't know, about late 40s. His daughter was 13, 14. He got a bad health diagnosis. And we were talking about goals. And I said, do you want a six pack? He's like, well, yeah. Everyone wants a six pack. So, yeah, I mean, we can get you a six pack. What do you think about being able to walk your daughter down the aisle, you know, in 6 years or in 8 years instead of dying of a heart attack or, you know, being in a wheelchair or, you know, whatever? Would that mean more to you than a six pack? He's like, well, yeah, that's what I want. I want to be there when she has kids. I want to be able to throw my grandkids around. I'm like, okay, well, now we're talking. Because that means a hell of a lot more to you and me than a six-pack, right? And so it's this idea of connecting. Or on the vice versa, or on the flip side, you're a father and, you, and a young father, and you got kids. Like, your young kids, your life is a blueprint. Right, for them, your life is their first classroom on fitness. They're going to learn habits from you, right? They watch you and they mimic you. They're not always going to do what you say, but you better believe they're going to do what you do, right? And in fact, it's going to be statistically very hard for them to do something other than what you're doing because you've modeled it for them for 18 years. And so if you want your children to live a healthy, active lifestyle, you can't just say it's important. You have to do it. You have to live it. They have to see you going to the gym, coming home. They have to run with you, going on family walks, or go down the basement and see you, you know, working out in your home gym. That is how you raise children who value health and wellness, not by you telling them, but by you actually modeling it and bringing them with you. So for me, that's that why power piece. Right, that really gets when you like kind of what you said, like understanding what's most important is what's going to keep you motivated.
Yeah, it eliminates a lot of the chatter too, like the internal conflict that just arises in your mind about like
totally
wanting to stay in and not drive to the gym because it's raining or whatever, like whatever story you create. I feel like it makes that stuff just kind of quiet down and the decisions become more matter of fact. Which is like, oh, it's just the way I do it. This is the way I live. This is the way I show up.
Yeah, this is a phrase that we use in my community. This is who I am. This is what I do. There's a lot of identity wrapped up in that, right? This is who I am. I am a great husband. I'm a present, loving father. I am athletic. I am a man who cares about his fitness. This is what I do. I work out. I'm there for my wife. You know, I'm fill in the blank. This is who I am. I'm calm. I'm cool. I'm collected. And this is what I do. I practice breathing exercises. I don't lose my temper on my kids. You know, and so we use phrases to attach our identity to these goals so that, you know, we have a much better chance at getting them.
Gotcha. You mentioned, I think it was before we hit record, that you made some type of product that gives guys like a daily reference of some sort or... What were you talking about?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about this in the beginning of the show, but you know, these divorce statistics, right? And how women, you know, divorce men, and up to 90% of divorces in the US are initiated by women. And so like, that's really significant. 80% of the time, the reason cited for the divorce is emotional disconnection, is feeling like you married a robot, right? So we know that men wrestle with connecting with their wife on an emotional level. And a lot, like I coach a lot of high performers. So a lot of these guys are like business owners, leaders, whatever. And so they don't have time to necessarily be ruminating over trying to say the right thing. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've done that a lot. I've thought about, okay, how do I say this? How do I say this? And then got it wrong, you know? And so I created this tool called the Spark Starter Kit. And it's very tactical, very simple. But what it is, it's I just tell people it's your romance on autopilot for an entire year. So what it is, it's 365 pre-written text messages for every situation. Like if you want to repair and reconnect, if you want to encourage your wife, celebrate her, whatever. And it's you just basically copy and paste, personalize it, send it, right? It's 52 date night blueprints. So you can take her on a date once a week if you want for the rest of the year. And it's already done for you. All I got to do is just show up and be the hero. There's 100 conversation starters. And this gets back to, you know, our struggle with, you know, really connecting with our wives on an emotional level. These conversation starters are drawn, they're designed to draw her out on an emotional level, because so many men are, they want to connect on a physical level, right? That's our need. And we're opposites, right? Women need to be engaged with emotionally before they can be, before they can engage physically. Men are the opposite. We engage physically first, and then after that interaction, we get a little bit more open emotionally, right?
Yeah, and why so, is it like that? Let's pause there. Like, what? That seems like whoever's designing this system overlooked something.
I know. It's like you're just like looking up a guy, like, why did you build us this way? But it's true. We're wired totally different. And it's like, you know, after sex, the pillow talk is like when the guy just gets, is really, really willing to talk about his feelings or emotions. But that's totally backwards from the wife. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's to make us work harder to be together. I don't know, but it's crazy. But yeah, the 100 conversation starters. And then the last thing in the kit is a three-part mini course. It's called the Romance Reset. So if you feel like your marriage has grown dull, boring, maybe you feel like roommates wearing rings, you know, like you're just sharing a house, but you have two different lives. This is really like a reset for your romance and your marriage. So that whole thing is like $17, cheaper than a bouquet of flowers. That's going to die in a year or in a week. Let's be honest. And so conversation starters, date night blueprints, text message templates, and then a small mini course on how to reset
text
your romance.
Message templates. Is this like something you send midday as like almost foreplay?
Yeah, dude. So there's five different scenarios. So, and they're all the same sort of scenario. So for example, on the date nights, if you are, if you're pressed for time, you know, here's a date night you can do. If you're both really tired, here's a date night idea. If you want to crank up the heat, you know, you want to get passionate, here's the date night idea.
Can you throw out an example of one of these?
Oh,
pick a favorite.
One is a recreating a first date, right? So if you remember where you went, what you ate for dinner, what you said, or like the music you listened to, creating a playlist of the music that you listened to when you started dating, you know, just little things like that. Like it's a simple thing when you think about. Okay, well we can remember where we went.
That's and if also you're not showing the woman, your spouse or partner, like you're paying attention.
100%. And it's like that is so, she's like instantly, she's like, wow, I haven't felt this way in 23 years or however long you've been married. And it's the music that brings you back. It's the environment. It's the food. And it's psychologically designed to bring you together, right? So that's the date idea. The text messages, same thing. It's like a bunch of texts for if you need to repair and reconnect, if you want to you know, if you want to be intimate later, how to warm her up to that messages that is going to turn her head, you know, and all those different things. So it's literally, there's tons of stuff in there. And so
that's interesting. I have, that gave me a good idea. It's funny. My first date with my wife, she was underage and we're 3 years apart and I was over and went to a bar and I snuck her in the back door. I think I want to do that.
Yeah,
you don't want to go to the same place and say, wait here at the back door. I'll sneak you in.
Do it. That's because, you know, for guys, it feels weird, right? But for women, that's the stuff they dream of. you know, being pursued like that. It's crazy. And so, yeah, man, that's actually what I gave my private clients. And then a bunch of them were like, man, you need to just get this out to the public. Because sometimes I'll have women email me. They'll track me down and be like, who was that man that took me out last night? Like, that was wild, you know? So it's really cool. It's like even validated by the women as well. So yeah, you can go to sparkstarterkit.com and get that kit if you'd like, or if you want, Les, you can just put it in the show notes, the link in the show notes.
Yeah, will do. So recreating it. I want to hear a couple others. What about like these text templates? What's an example of that?
Oh, it could be simple, man. It could be like...
Putting you on the spot too much?
There's 365 to think through. But like, it could be something simple as like, I love seeing how you smile when you're with the kids, you know? It's just like appreciation. Or, you know, I've been thinking about that dress you wore last night all day, you know? Or I've been thinking, you know, I saw you walk away and I've been thinking about it ever since, you know? Or it could be like, hey, something simple like me, you, you know, 8 p.m., the bedroom. I'll see you there. Or it could be anything, really. This could be stuff like that. Or it could be, you know, just frameworks to if you guys had a big fight and it's like you want to have a conversation and you don't know how to start it, right? There's templates for stuff like that, right? So, yeah, there's lots of different
things. That's a great idea, especially like around the, I guess, I don't know, bedroom romance or whatever. Having it where it's not this like... I feel like it's really useful to have a power differential where yes. It's not equal, like regardless what side it is, where make it easier for the other person by just like taking that first step.
Lead the way.
Yeah.
100%. And a lot of situations, that's what women are craving, right? But the thing is we go so far. We get like, it's like nothing or it's like everything. You're either like not even looking at her because you're scrolling on your phone, or you're grabbing at her while she's washing the dishes. And you're like, right. She's like, what are you doing, you animal? You know, it's like, it's just hot or cold, right? And so teaching guys how to actually do that tactfully and in a way that she's receptive to is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, great advice. That is, and I'm sure there's just so many guys listening that resonates with, you know?
Well, I mean, it resonated with me. That's why I built it and all my clients, so.
Well, that's great. Well, Mitchell, I enjoyed this. I appreciate you reaching out and enjoyed this discussion. The Dad Nation podcast, where else can people find you?
Thanks for asking, man. You can just check out, if you just Google the Dad Nation, you'll see my face plastered around there on the Googles. But the Dad Nation podcast is where you'll hear from me a lot. I bring on industry experts and had a lot of big names on there. And then also just I teach on there. I teach a lot of frameworks that I teach my one-to-one clients. I just give it all away, man. Tons and tons of stuff. So anything that you are, could be struggling with as a man, husband, father, we talk about fitness. We talk about relationships. We talk about fatherhood. We talk about finances, business. I mean, everything. And a lot of women listen too, actually, because they want to learn how to understand the mind of their husband. And so I get about 25% of my followers are women because they're trying to get through to their husbands. And so they find it really valuable as well. But anyways, yeah, check it out. You can hit me up through the email, through the website if you want, but would love to connect and help serve you any way I know how. Like I said in the beginning, I love helping the men that I like helping the man that I used to be, right? And that is the man who's, you know, seen success professionally. Maybe he's a leader in his industry, or he's an entrepreneur or whatever. And he comes home and he's just kind of confused. The puzzle pieces fit together at work, but you come home and, like I said earlier, you feel powerful at work and powerless when you come home. Maybe marriage is dry, is boring. Maybe your wife has said, maybe it's not working out. It's gotten to that point, right? Maybe you feel disconnected from your kids, or you gained a little extra weight because you've been pursuing the business and the personal side is a little bit out of whack. Well, let's have a conversation, you know, help you get it dialed in.
Sounds great. Well, Mitchell, thanks again. For the listeners, always grateful for your listening. Hope you enjoyed the conversation and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.